Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to the final score with Matthew and
Stevie Fly. What's up, guys? The final score is back again, and tonight with me, I haven't done an interview in a while, and I know it's football season, but somebody like this, you have to take when you get them. And I mean, it's football season, but Carolina basketball, you know, I'm a big Carolina basketball fan. I've had Salvadori's been on here. Oh, geez. Terrence Newby's been one that's been on here. There's been a couple other guys. And tonight, probably the biggest Carolina one I've had up here is with me. He went to Carolina from 87 to 91, played on some great Carolina teams. And I mean, when I say great, Final Four teams, with King Rice, Rick Fox, among others, with me tonight. And also, I mean, how you leave this out, you talk about Carolina basketball, someone, an NBA world champion with the Houston Rockets. With me tonight is Mr. Pete Chilcutt. Welcome to the show, Mr. Chilcutt. How you doing?
Awesome, awesome. Thank you so much for having me on. Anytime I get a chance to talk basketball, anything in the past, Carolina, don't worry about the season. I'm happy to do it.
Exactly. That's the way I feel. You talk about it anytime. So you grew up in what, Sumter, South Carolina? Is that right?
I was born in Sumter, South Carolina, but my parents separated when I was quite young. So I kind of moved around a little bit, but I was raised for the most part in Alabama.
Okay. So you go to Tuscaloosa Academy in Alabama. So early days, I'm sure you were a basketball fan growing up. Who was some of the people you pulled for? Who was your team, or who was some of the players that you grew up idolizing?
Well, you have to kind of be back from that time frame to kind of know what I'm talking about, because kids these days, you can see whoever you want, whenever you want.
Exactly.
I was coming into watching basketball when it first started being put on TV by ESPN, and that was, the early 80s. And they had some games on there, and you wouldn't believe who they had. It was Carolina and this freshman named Michael Jordan. So I was by my bed with my little 4-inch screen on my TV, and I would watch those games. I remember several games. I remember the game up in, I think, Maryland, where he did his famous little rock to cradle dunk. Yeah.
Yep.
And so from the very beginning, when they started putting those games on TV, I was like, that's my dream school, and that's the player I want to be like. Just like any other kid.
You talk about ESPN. I'm from a small town in northeastern North Carolina. We have about 90 people here. We never got cable here. So we had a outdoor antenna, and I think WRAL was the channel that usually showed like the Holly Farms or the Raycom Sports game of the week. You have one during the week, and then you had several on the weekend, but that was the only way I got to see it then. But yeah, it was nothing like it. And I'm going to tell you, nothing, no offense to the guys these days, but the games back then seemed like they were, and maybe it's because I was so young, they seemed like it's more exciting back then than it was today. But anyway, so were there any other sports you played besides basketball?
I grew up and I was a well-rounded kid. I played baseball and football. I'm in Alabama, so of course I'm playing football.
Oh, yeah.
Basketball was always there. I had a little injury in about the 10th grade that I bruised my kidney. And I went to the doctor, and, I had some issues with my with just really sore. And he did some tests, and he said, "Well, Pete, you got some good news and I got some bad news." He goes, "The good news is we figured out you just bruised your kidney." He goes, "But the bad news is we can't find your other one."
Oh, Lord.
I was like, "What? What? Yeah." And he's like, "Yeah, you must have been born without it. You can function. Most people wouldn't even know they have one kidney unless you have an issue. You'll be fine." He goes, "But I recommend that you quit playing all sports." And I remember I'm 15 years old, and I love sports. And so I went out in the car and I cried. And my mom came out there and we're like, We're gonna quit football, but we're gonna protect yourself. But we're gonna keep on playing basketball." So at that point, I got rid of all the other sports and just focused on basketball.
So, and good choice too, because you're not taking all that beating, and I think you turned that into a pretty good career. So, I guess that's when you knew. That was my next question. When did you know basketball was gonna be the sport you concentrated on? I guess after you found out you only got one kidney, that would be it.
Yeah, it was 10th grade. But again, you know, kids are different today. They have all this stuff on TV, but they also, they know at a young age that they're going to do this, this, and this. And
yes.
I just love the sport, and I didn't have any realistic idea that I would be able to do it in college. And so I probably realized that in the summer of my junior year. That's how late it was. Then I realized I could do this in college. And so it was a little different than the kids these days who probably get offered in the ninth grade. I was just doing it because I love the sport.
Right. And talk a little bit about the recruiting process. I know, you know, of course, Carolina's there. What other schools besides Carolina were in the mix, like were in your final choices?
Sure. Well, again, a little different than these days. Now, there was no AAU back then. All these summer basketball camps were going on. So my sophomore year, I went to the University of South Carolina camp because that's where my dad lives. And then my junior year after that summer, I went to a big BC camp, a five-star camp, Nike ABC camp. So some big camps. I made like a five camp summer out of it. And I started out not playing well, and I worked my way to play really good at the end of the summer. And it went from who's this kid from Alabama to like they wanted to watch that kid from Alabama. And you remember, if you're in old school, you remember these pictures that were in Sports Illustrated. I think the guy's name was Chris Washburn. He had this picture where he's laying on a bed with thousands of letters.
Yes.
From colleges. I had not thousands, but I had pretty much any country, any school in the country that you could think of had wrote me a letter. And remember, no emails those days, letters.
All letters.
And I think it was easier for me to say who didn't send me a letter. And that was the ones I remember off the top of my head were Indiana and NC State. And pretty much everyone else sent me letters. And I knew where I wanted to go, as I told you, but I narrowed it down through that summer to my five were Carolina, Duke, Alabama, Georgia Tech, and Virginia. So that was
four ACC schools.
Four ACC schools in my school that I was where I grew up at home. And I tell you what, that was a fun process that fall to go on those trips. And then to have, I was telling somebody the other day, I had in my living room, I had Bobby Crimmins, I had Coach K, I had Coach Smith, I had Wimp Sanderson, and I had Terry Holland. I mean,
legendary coaches right there.
I got some great pictures from back then, but yeah. I don't even know if I really could appreciate back then what was coming in there because a lot of those guys were real young. And Coach K was just really getting started.
Yeah.
But that was a fun process, and I worried my parents a couple of times. I got back from some of those visits. I mean, I went to Georgia Tech, and Bobby Crimmins can – you know, sell ice to an Eskimo. And I'm sitting there coming back. I'm like, Mom, I said, I think I want to go to Georgia Tech. And she looks at me, gives me that little evil eye. And she said, I'll let you think about that for a day.
And then we'll talk. She wanted you to go to Carolina too.
Big time.
Okay.
So, but there, that was a fun process. I had some great visits, you know, at all those schools. I did not end up going to visit Virginia. At that point, I kind of really figured out that, I was going to go to Carolina. And, you know, it was a fun process, but in the end, you know, when your dream school comes calling, you know, that was that's where I wanted to go.
So was there one particular thing? I know you said you pretty much from day one when you watched Jordan, was there one particular thing during the visit though that really swayed you that you could have said, hey, you know, that's it right there. I'm done.
Well, you have to be in my mindset, first of all. So, again, I grew up in a town of about 3,000 people. So bigger than yours, but smaller
than most.
So and back in that time frame, again, you know, football state. And so I went on this trip, and I had heard, you know, my parents talk about Coach Smith and how great he was, and I'd seen the championship. But, you know, when I walked in on my visit, they were still building the Dean Dome. They didn't have the floors down yet or the stands up yet. So there was construction going on. And I just felt like I entered, you know, not only blue heaven, but like the pinnacle of college basketball. And almost to the point where I was like, they want me to be here. how can that be? But I'm jumping on that. So the visit cemented it, but yeah. I mean, this is how bad I wanted to go to Carolina. When I did my visit to Duke, you know, my mom and dad drove up and they just picked me up from Duke. We drove back to Carolina and I did another unofficial visit to Carolina. Like I just couldn't get enough of being around that program and Coach Smith. And again, it probably feels different than today because I held all those coaches and even those players at that point like so high.
Oh, yeah.
I just had so much respect for them, and I was very, very low key, soft spoken, and just polite and reverent. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Yes, yes, coach. Yes, sir. And I just felt like that was the royalty of college basketball. So the visit cemented it, but there is really no doubt in the end where I wanted to go.
Right. So talk a little bit. I mean, of course, playing for Coach Smith, a lot of people got to do that. But what was it like, though, playing for Coach Smith? I mean, it had to be awesome.
Well, you know, I thought about many times, what if I had gone Alabama? What if I had gone to Georgia Tech? And, I mean, I think obviously you can look back and say, what if? But my career, I don't think would have been as good as it was. I don't think I would have been as good a player. I don't think I would have been as good a person. I don't think a lot of things that have been good in my life would have happened. And I know you can say that, but like I really, really believe everything that happened throughout my career was due to where I went and the kind of coaching I got in the guidance from Coach Smith. I mean, I'm not going to hide from it. When I came out of Alabama from that small school, I wasn't very good. I mean, I had some good ranking because of these camps, but when I got to the big time, remember, this was the big time. I had J.R. Reed and Scott Williams.
Yeah.
And you may have forgotten that I redshirted my first year. So
yeah.
I came in with Joe Wolf, Dave Popson.
All
those guys were like, you know, legit players. So I had to go up against those guys, and I wasn't ready for that. So Coach Smith recommended that I redshirt. Great suggestion. Helped me build some strength and some experience. But the biggest thing that I think I took away from that whole experience was, you know, when I graduated from Carolina, I had the record with King and Rick. We had played 140 games.
Yeah.
I did not ever not play. Coach Smith played me in every single game. And I'm telling you, I did not deserve that. But that coach and that man was such a good coach and leader of men that he found a way to get me into the games to develop myself. And so when I developed, that's how I became the scared little skinny freshman to a late first round draft pick. I mean, there's no way that should have happened, and it wouldn't have happened anywhere else. So I owe everything to Coach Smith and that university for sure.
Now and you look at the bench beside him, you had Coach Guthridge. Was Coach Williams still there when you got there?
Coach Williams was there for a couple of years.
Yeah, and then you had Eddie Fogler was there. So you had some great coaching to there too, besides Coach Smith. I mean, legendary coaches there.
But yeah. Coach Williams was kind of my project. I was his project. So remember, I came in not ready for it. So he would ride me and he was hard on me. And I saw him probably 5 or 6 years ago. He goes, you know what? I should probably apologize. I was so hard on you. And I was like, you know, Coach, that's what I needed. I mean, and he almost wouldn't expect me to act that way, because I was like, I do not hold anything. Like, he was hard, but like, I think I needed that. From what he was able to get to me was like, you need to step it up and realize this is a mayhem school. And I needed that tough love. So yeah, I mean, I had some great coaches and boy, was I lucky.
Yeah. And I'm a volunteer coach for football over here. And I tell my kids, you know, because this is a different generation than when you were in school, when I was in school. A lot of these kids take this stuff to heart. And I say, well, if I come down on you and tell you you're doing something wrong, it's because I know you can do better and you got potential. If you do something wrong and I don't say anything to you, that's when you might need to worry. But, I mean, it's like with Coach Williams riding you like that. He knew he saw something in you, I guess. And he was right. So, I mean.
You know, it was a different time. I talked, you know, Hubert, Coach Davis was my roommate for 1 year in school. So I've talked to him a lot about how he's doing and just the kids these days. And it's way, like you said, it's way different.
Way different.
Sensitive kids, you know, sensitive parents, you know. So he goes, like, sometimes I don't even talk to the kids. I talk to, like, agents, like the people that aren't even in the family. Like, it's just totally strange. But it is a different generation. But I think, you know, there's something to – being tough on kids. Nothing wrong with that.
No. First impressions when you get on Carolina campus.
I need some new clothes. my little limited wardrobe from Alabama wasn't cutting it. I remember I actually went and looked in Jeff Lebo's closet, and I was like, okay, he's an upperclassman. This is what he's got. So I was like, I need to get that kind of stuff. So like, it was just like some collared golf shorts, you know, shirts, some shorts. I mean, I didn't have much. And I didn't, again, remember, I was kind of new, kind of thrown out in the world, kind of far from home. So my first impression was, oh, and by the way, I was living my freshman year with J.R. Reed.
Wow.
So throw that into the mix. I mean, that man is not only just a beast on the court, but he was he's a loud, he has a great personality, but he's over the top. Like, just me and him, we took a while to kind of click, and we eventually did, but that was an adjustment. That was an adjustment. Me and Granville right. Towers, those rooms aren't that big for 2 6-foot-10 guys.
That makes kind of close quarters. What was there?
Yeah, so she was, you know, I would say my first semester was tough. I mean, tougher than you might think. I thought about, you know, can I do this? You know, I was redshirting. I wasn't doing some good school. I was having trouble adjusting a little bit socially. So all that stuff was building up. And Coach Gushridge just said, hey, you know, just let it ride. Get through this first semester. It'll pick up in the spring. It always happens for freshmen. And he was right. He was right.
So your first, after you redshirt that first year, and you come out in the 87-88 year. Your first game is against number one Syracuse. What a way to open it up. What was it like, though, just stepping out onto court as a Tar Heel in that kind of situation? I mean, it was at Springfield Civic Center, but you're going against number one Syracuse your first game. What was your feelings like when you ran out on that court the first time?
You know, there were some nerves going on. Whenever I've had big moments in my career about what I need to kind of do well, perform well, I usually go back to the core of what I am as a player. And that is just do what you do and do it well. Like, don't try to do anything else. And coming in as a freshman, I don't quite sure I knew what I did well at that point, but I did know that I could rebound. I'm a big body. I could hit open shots. Yeah, I was going against Ronnie Cicely and Derek Coleman. Those guys were just straight from the Final Four, first round, you know, lottery draft picks to be. I think my attitude was more the same as a team, and that is, we're not a group of individuals here. We're just a team, and as a team, you know, we're gonna do whatever it takes to pick each other up. And we had so many kids step up in that game. You know, Rick Fox had a great first half. Ranzino shot lights out. I was able to do some stuff later in the second half. So we all kind of bonded together, I think, as a team. I mean, we were down at 11, I think, in the first half. And tough situation. You know, one person who didn't have any doubt in us was Coach Smith. You know, he kept on that calm demeanor. And, you know, those were the kind of things, I mean – back in those days, those are the kind of games that Carolina would win. And you walk away like, how did they win that game? they really shouldn't have. And it happened not only that game, but like many times, like we just stole victory where we should have probably lost it. And the players did their jobs, but I think the coaching staff is kind of should get big credit for those games.
Yeah. And then first game at the Smith Center. I mean, it's got to be something special where you're being a big time fan all your life, and then to be able to run out to it and all that blue had to be something special. That probably would have been more nerves for me than it was playing Syracuse the first game.
You're right. Actually, running out at home for the very beginning of my career was more nervous for me than playing on the road, because it can be just as loud on the road, but that kind of motivates. You know, when you're a competitor, you like you like that noise. But at home, it was a lot of butterflies, because like, you're like, here I am, this brand new facility. You know, I think the game after Syracuse, we may have done like a game against, I want to say it was like the Russian team or something, some kind of exhibition, but it was intimidating because of the 21,000 people. And not only that, like I had, all of a sudden there was like, well, he just did that in his first game. Like, what's he going to do now? Like,
exactly. Like, expectations.
I don't know. Like, I was up for the Russian team as I was for Syracuse. Like, it was hard to kind of get back up to that level because like JR was back. Like I knew I was probably going to be doing a support role from then on, but It was a tough sell. And that's just part of, again, what you're trying to do as you come into a school like this was become a better player, but also learn to deal with that pressure, because there's pressure at that level of basketball that you've never had before.
I talk a little bit about, and you know, you talked about your final five schools, were four of them were ACC schools. Playing in the ACC back then, I mean, that was like every night was a tough game. There was no pushovers back then. You had competitors every night. What was it like? You know, you go out there against a Georgia Tech. Was Sally there then? I think John Sally then.
Yeah, you go Sally. Yeah,
Tom Hammond's in there. You go up against Duke. You go up against Clemson. What was it like playing in the ACC back then?
It was obviously a little biased here, but I think it was one of those toughest conferences that there were back in those days.
I agree.
Don't forget Maryland was back in the ACC then, and that was always a tough place. You know, you list those schools, and I just start thinking of the, like, Clemson. Well, the Dale Davis and Eldon Campbell.
Yes.
You know, I think of Duke. They were coming on strong, right? They were building that class with Danny Ferry coming in, and all those schools, like – I don't remember. There probably were some teams that weren't as good, but I just remember them all being strong, like you said. Fortunately, we had some of those teams like that were just pretty well-rounded and deep, and we did pretty well every year, except for one year we probably had a little hiccup in 1990. But, you know, the thing that I remember from playing in ACC, like you said, was there was never a night where you had a night off. And once again, it just feels like we were taught differently and coached differently. Coach did a great job of making us recognize that it was a battle every night. I think one of the things he always said was, like, no matter who we're playing, like, they all got scholarships over there. Like, they got scholarships
right.
Football. And don't look down on them, because, like, you're all the same. You're all got scholarships. Like, it's what you do with your skill once you get out there. You can't just think you're going to be better going on the floor. So pretty much we were all motivated and grounded on that philosophy going into most of those games.
You talked a little bit about it, and you said he was your roommate the first year. What was it like playing with J.R. Reed?
Well, we'll get past that first semester. And again, once I got through that, like it was, we had a great relationship, and we still do to this day. And I have always been one of the biggest J.R. Reed fans that you'll find. When he left school, I would have bet my last dollar that he would have been an NBA All-Star.
Yeah.
Multiple years. I mean, he remember, in practice, we got big guys. We're going at it all the time. And the skill set he had with his aggressiveness and his big butt and his post moves and his strength, and just, he was just you know, one of those players that just played hard and was hard to guard one-on-one. And you saw that when he played here. And I would have bet my bottom dollar that once the game opened up in the NBA, that he would have had even more success. And I'm not saying he just didn't reach that level I thought he would have.
Right.
But he had a great career, a nice long career. But I would have sworn he would have been an NBA All-Star, because he just has so many skills coming in there.
Yeah, same here. First time gearing up for the ACC tournament. How crazy was it at the ACC tournament? That was at the Greensboro Coliseum, which is where it should be. But how crazy was that the first time you get to play in the ACC tournament?
Well, you know, we had one of my best teams I played on. I think the best team I ever played on was that team that I actually was redshirted on. So
yeah,
the
86 team.
86 team. But every year in ACC tournament, you know, it became very evident that nothing else mattered. They happened before. You could have swept Duke. You could have swept Georgia Tech. But when you play them in the tournament, it was on. And it was like some of those teams, like, relished in the fact that they could knock you out of the tournament.
Exactly.
And it was hard. It didn't matter who we played against. It always seemed like it was hard to advance. I think I remember definitely in Greensboro, you know, we didn't, I don't think we won any of those in Greensboro, but we got to the final, or at least I know we played Duke a couple of times. But just the atmosphere went from, you know, you talk about NBA regular season games to NBA playoffs. Like, this was a playoff. This is a playoff where everything was stepped up. The pressure jumped up, and I could only imagine, you know, back in the day when, if you didn't win the ACC tournament, you didn't get to go.
I mean,
that would have been insane. I don't know how you could stay calm during that situation. So at least we were able to still go to the tournament no matter what happened. But those ACC tournament games were many, many memories of just tough, tough, tough battles and not, you know, knock them out, sock them, rock them, sock them games.
Yes.
And not always did we come on top. Like that was just part of it. It's almost just like the NCAA tournament. Like they're hard on a one game thing to always get your victory. So it doesn't always matter how we did in regular season. Sometimes those games snuck up on you.
Yeah. So you guys end up going to the tournament, the NCAA tournament. That's had to be crazy. One of the craziest games I've ever seen Carolina play in a tournament game or any game was La Jolla. And I'm sure I'm not saying that right, but 123 points and give up 97 points. But how crazy was that? And what was the game plan going in with Coach Smith had going against those guys?
Well, that was one of the funnest games I think I ever played in. And if you had known, you know, and a lot of people know about Coach Smith and like just, but if you'd known specifically what kind of coach he was, you can almost imagine how he would have coached that game. And his coaching directive was, we're not shooting anything but layups. And if you watch that tape, I think we may have shot, did we shoot like 78% from the field? It was something.
Yeah, I think it was a high percentage. It sure was.
And if you watch that tape, you might see 5 or 10 jump shots. Like there was about 35 layups. And it was all based on, if you watch their film, like they just want to run and gun and outshoot you. They didn't really work on the D. They might be pressuring. We went back door so many times. And I don't remember who scored a lot for us, but I know it was probably a guard on like Ranzino.
Ranzino, I think, remember, he had a big game.
It was layups. I mean, that was it. If you shot a jump shot, he probably would have taken you out. I mean, that was, and if you think about it, like that's the smartest thing you could do. Like, why would you? And so we didn't necessarily, you know, they scored 97, but that was that pace back up and down. But yeah. we just had so many baskets that we just right under the basket.
And you guys end up losing to, I think, eventual national champion Michigan that year. But come back. No, you lost to Arizona that year. You guys get a rematch against Arizona the next year, get a little revenge on them. But talk a little bit about playing at the Smith Center. I mean, we talked about your first game there, but how was it? And we talked before we went on the air about playing Kentucky and you getting the dunk that put you all here for the first time tonight, how loud it got. Talk a little bit about playing at the Smith Center, because I know one of your future teammates, Sam Cassell, had a lot to say about the crowd there. And I don't know if you ever got him back for that, but yeah, after that comeback game we had against Florida State. But talk a little bit about playing at the Smith Center.
Well, you know Sam Cassell is a funny dude, and I love being around him. But I'm not even going to say he was all wrong on that comment. I mean, if you watched and played in there a lot, like there'd be times. Well, it's just such a big arena, and if the game wasn't necessarily close, like it'd be kind of quiet in there. And if you play at an NC State or at a Duke with those little small arenas back in the day, or at Clemson, I mean, those things were always rocking. You know, they had the students all around the court. And the Smith Center just really wasn't set up that way to have those students right on. And usually I think they're on the one end line. So there's a little truth to that. But I would say for the big games, it didn't matter that it was rocking. And as I mentioned before, when your home court's rocking, it's a little different than when the away place is rocking. I almost like playing in away arenas when those places are really loud, because it felt like we're trying to shut them up. But it definitely helps to have those crowds against, you know, we're playing against Duke or NC State, have them rocking. And I mean, so many big memories. I think you're right on that Kentucky game. That may have been the loudest I ever heard it. I mean, I don't know how much time was left in that game, but we had not
about led. A minute left, I think.
We had not led the entire game, and just got a fluke play off the floor, took the lead, and you know we won that game. But like that crowd was going insane in that part. Yeah, that was awesome.
Usually when I interview like a ACC basketball player from back in your time, I ask this question, and I get your honest opinion on that. All right, you played at Reynolds Coliseum. Incredible place to play, I'm sure. And the crowd was right there. I mean, the students were right there on you. Do you feel like, and I know it's a must for some of these programs to have a bigger arena to put more booties in the seat and get more money. But like with Reynolds especially, they gave up an incredible home court advantage by going to a bigger arena and not having Reynolds there because I just remember that how hot that place was, how loud. I mean, the noise meter and all that. It was, you know, just like Carolina with Carmichael.
Right.
Carmichael was a little littler and had it would get louder. But you think you give away a big home court advantage with that?
I really do. You're right. No doubt. Carmichael, I mean, come on, with that hole, about 9,000, 10,000.
Yeah.
And again, the Duke still has it. And NC State had it, and Clemson had it. I mean, I think they're in the same place in Clemson, but they've redone it. Those places, to me, as a coming in as a player, is more intimidating when it's just really close to the floor and it's all these students right there. Definitely a harder place to play. But like you said, we're talking about corporate money now and getting butts in the seats to sell those tickets and get those suites filled up. I was talking to somebody about the Smith Center. Like it seems like it's not that old, but like, as I said, it was built my freshman year. That place has got to be considered out of date now. There's no suites.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
and like, we're talking like, how are they going to change that? Because I think they're going to have to. And then my suggestion would have been just rebuild it on site and play in Carmichael while they're doing it. And then you got that crowd back. And awesome facility. I mean, that'd be so awesome. And then they would keep the Smith Center where the Smith Center should be. And I don't know that they're going to do that or even that they had plans to do that. But when you walk around to these new arenas these days, I mean, they're impressive. And we're like, wow, ours is from the 80s.
Yep. I just think, you know, and this is something because I talked to Chris Corciani and some of these other guys from State about it. They should have at least a couple of games back at Reynolds. I don't know if it's possible or not, but it would be great to see State play a couple of games at Reynolds or Carolina play at Carmichael just for the old feel of it again. But
no doubt, that'd be awesome.
So you were right on the edge of probably the biggest rivalry in college basketball right now and has been for a while. You were right on the edge of it when it was starting to heat up. Talk a little bit about playing against Duke and playing at Cameron.
Well, you know, you're right. When I was in high school, like, Duke was a good school and Coach K was a good coach. I didn't know any better. Like, I just assumed, like, he was a nice guy. And then I got to school and realized, oh my gosh, they're the evil people over there. And you know, the kid that goes to Duke, you can pick him out in the crowd. Like, there's certain types of players, you know, and I'm half joking, but I'm half not. Like, we just hated everything about Duke. Now, I've since, like, I played in Sacramento with Bobby Hurley. And right. I hate to say it, he's a nice guy. It hurts a little bit to say that, but like, back in the day, when you didn't know these players on a personal level, there was just a lot of hate there just because they went to Duke. And that rivalry was definitely cooking during my time there. We were talking about it the other day when I think it was in Atlanta when we won that tournament.
Oh, yes.
That was the hardest fought game I think I've ever even been in. In that rivalry, it was just knock and sock them, and we had some great plays. They had some plays, and I mean, we won. But I remember even the Danny Ferry shot at the buzzer from like three quarter court, like bounced off the back of the rim. Like it was knock them out fight, and every time we played those guys, it was almost we're taking over the conference, and we're like, no, we're still here, we kind of held them off for the time being, but it was some intense stuff. And I mean, stitches and blood, I know I got a couple of split eyes and Montrose got bloodied, and you know, it's always been that way. And I don't know that it obviously is ever going to end unless somehow they break apart the ACC, which I heard they might.
Oh Lord, let's hope they don't do that. But anyway, that ACC championship game, it's probably been 5 or 6 years ago. They were replaying it on somewhere. And I was on Twitter one night, and the reason I knew that replay, J.R. Reed, of all people, he was tweeting it, and me and him started going back and forth watching the game, and I was asking him about certain things. It was kind of like an interview right there on Twitter, and he was, like, talking about Ferry and Leitner, how they were getting into it so much, and then he said, he said, I had scratches everywhere. I was like, gosh, like, Tough. But and you talk a little bit about being able to go. I think Duke was number one. You go to Cameron, and you guys beat Duke at Cameron with their number one. And I mean, and not just beat them. This was 89. You beat them by 20.
Yeah, I mean, 20.
How was it getting out of there? I mean, I'm sure there was some not so nice things said when you guys were leaving out there. And while we're on that, what is the best Cameron story you can tell from your experience there?
Well, you know, I'm going to say that might be my best experience. But overall, we weren't ranked that high. I think we went in there maybe that year at rank number 20 or something. They were ranked highly, but
yeah,
when we roll in there, you know, everyone in our team doesn't have any issue with confidence. Like, we know we can win that game. And I want to say off the record, like, I think I was four and four there, like, which I think is pretty awesome considering, that was supposed to be a tough place to play, but going in there for that game, we believe in ourselves. I think one of the plays on that game that I remember for myself was somehow they got a breakaway down the court. I'm the only person back, and it's literally like 5-on-1. And they pull up. I just kind of protecting the basket. They pull up for like a 10-footer. Somehow they miss. I get the rebound with all four guys hanging all over me. I turn and do an outlet down to Rick Fox, who's, you know, wide open down the court, and we get the dunk. And I think that may have been that game. And just that game with down the stretch, I'm pretty sure that was when King Rice was hitting his free throws down the stretch. And as I mentioned, going into Duke, when they're highly ranked, having a hard fought game and winning, there's nothing much better than having that crowd shut up. You've heard them shut up. You heard them shut up last year, which may be probably better than our that may take the place in all-time wins at Duke.
Yeah, I have to say that probably trumped all of them with the situation there.
No doubt with that. But there's nothing like, I think they're even more annoying now, those fans over there now. I mean, back in the day they were just loud, but now they're dressing up, hopping around. There's nothing better. I don't care. You name another school, it doesn't matter. That is the best way to get a victory at Duke when it's going crazy like that.
Yeah, and you talk a little bit about you mentioned Rick Fox. What was it like having Rick Fox as a teammate?
You know, we had with my new class since I redshirted with him and King Rice. I mentioned before that we had three seniors who were getting a lot of time there and different leadership styles. I mean, King Rice was a tough, you know, leader, verbal, you know, getting kids going, tough kid, great playmaker, defensive player. Rick Fox, who was just, you know, Mr. Hollywood, but boy, his game backed it up. I mean, he was so smooth and so he had so many skills that he was developing at that time in his career that he was becoming like every year, like, oh, he's doing that now. He's getting better
and better every year.
And just became so consistent. And he just, you know, he could be a verbal leader. He could lead by example. He was a great uniter. And I was more of just like, you know, I lead by example. Like, you know, I'm going out there, I'm putting in the work. You know, you work hard, you play, right? You play hard, you win. Kind of those three guys. Rick was always just, you know, to all of us, kind of a goofy kid from Bahamas. But boy, when you know, him and King kind of clicked together, and we had a strong senior class, the stuff that he was able to do and play with him, kind of gave me, you know, when we all graduated. You know, we all were King didn't get a shot in the league, but right. I just had high expectations, just like I did for JR. I had high expectations for Rick because you just got that feeling that he just kind of everything kind of came easy to him, right? Like he had this skill set, but when he did it, he just looked like it wasn't a big deal, like no effort. Oh, here's a bank shot. Oh, here's a three pointer. Oh, you want a spin move? He could jump. He had humongous hands. So it was really fun playing with those guys for sure.
Yeah, and then he goes on to have a good, pretty good NBA career with the Lakers and other teams. But I think, like you said, Mr. Hollywood, you know, we were watching – what was that show my wife was watching the other night? Gosh, I can't remember it, but it's a church. It's set in a church. And I look up, there's Rick Fox again. I'm like, geez, he's everywhere.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Seems to be a great guy. Another guy that you got to play with that doesn't get talked about, he did a great job at Carolina, but his NBA career it's got to be one of the best NBA careers as far as putting rings on his fingers. Scott Williams. I mean, how do you look? I've asked. I've sent messages to Mr. Williams about an interview. I got my fingers crossed that I can get him. But how in the world do you step in? You go to a place like Carolina, and then you step right in and get drafted and go to the Bulls when they've got Jordan, they've got Pippen. And I mean, not just sit there, but he made a big contribution to to those championship teams. But what was it like playing with Scott Williams?
Well, I'm glad you brought Big Will. We call him Big Will, and we are still friendly with Big Will. He flies over all the time. I was just with him a couple weeks ago. We went to the App State game earlier this year. I'm a big Will fan, and you misspoke a little bit, because one of the biggest travesties his senior year was he did not get drafted. And he had to go to the camp and earn his spot. And if you can imagine, like, going on to the Bulls, like, that's a tough ask. And Jordan can be very demanding, and that was a great team already. But what I tell Bill Will all the time, like, why he was successful to me was he played super hard and he was super active. Rebounding, defense, he could knock down an open shot. But when you saw him play during the years, like, it was just because he was so active and such a good had good savvy, knew what to do on the court, and he wouldn't hurt you. Like, when he came in the game, he was going to do positive things.
Yep.
So I was at the same time in the league with him, but I look back now, I'm like I'm very proud just to know that he accomplished. And like you said, three rings, you know. Yeah.
First three years, three rings. I mean, you can't beat that.
You use that to kind of put his career onto, like, he played, you know, another 12 years or so. He played for a long time.
He
persevered a lot. You guys probably all know the story of his family.
Yes.
And the fact that he kind of got through that, had a great career at Carolina, and then built his own career in the league. Like, he built it out of nothing. Like, that's much respect right there.
Yeah. I mean, no, I don't want any disrespect for him. He had one of the, like I said, one of the NBA careers that a lot of people don't talk about, but gosh knows, you look at the hardware and look what he did there. I mean, he didn't just sit on the bench and get a ring. I'll put it that way. He came out and he did. Jordan wouldn't have had him doing that. But you go in your junior year, not such a great year to start with. You guys are unranked going into the ACC tournament, but you beat Duke at Cameron that year. And we're going to get into this game, this other game, the NCAA tournament. That's probably one of my favorite NCAA tournament games there. But another, I have to ask you this question. Besides Coach Smith in the ACC, who was your favorite coach in the ACC at that time?
ACC. Well, it wasn't Val Valno because he didn't recruit me.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I don't remember for sure who was at Wake Forest, but, you know, if Dave Odom was around there, I know he was tied to that program. I always liked Coach Odom, and I always liked the coach from Clemson, Cliff Ellis. I did an ACC tournament team that we went overseas and played in Greece after my sophomore year, and Kevin and Madden and myself went over, and Coach Ellis was the coach. Really got to know him a little bit better and loved him as a coach. But those are the two I kind of had my only interactions with, because they kind of were on the same. They recruited me a little bit. I had some personal history with them. At that point, I'm still a little bit on the curve with Coach K. You know, the hate was building, but it wasn't quite there yet. I knew he was maybe the opposite of Coach Smith. And I think Coach Smith represented everything I loved about basketball. So he was getting to that place where he was just the evil guy. But at that point, I still respected him. He had been in my house and been kind to me. So I didn't have those ill feelings quite as much as you might think.
All right. I got you. So another guy that we don't talk about a whole. First of all, you mentioned Kevin Madden. Before I get to this next, what's Kevin Madden up to now? You hear from him?
You know, the last time I heard was he's up in Virginia still. I think maybe even in Staunton where he grew up. And I think he's coaching in a high school.
Okay.
That's the last I heard. That's not 100%. And I was talking to somebody. That's another kind of a sad story, because that guy could kind of do a little bit of everything. Now,
yes, he could.
For the NBA, maybe a little undersized, but I don't know that you should have written him off, but he had that knee injury, you know, that year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Was kind of sad, but love Kevin Madden. He was a great teammate and just a great personality.
Another teammate of yours, and I know we're talking about a lot of teammates, but you had a lot of great ones that doesn't get talked about a lot, but had key moments off the bench. And, you know, I remember, I think it might have been his senior year against Florida State or maybe his junior year. Henrik Rodal. What was it like playing with Henrik Rodal? He was just a quiet assassin. I mean, what was it like with him?
Yeah, I really enjoyed, you know, get to play with him too much, right, as I was kind of on my way out. But he's always, you know, and I've kept kind of keep in touch with him over the years. I just did realize recently that I didn't know that he's the German coach now.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
But he was always a great teammate, just always really friendly. Even after, you know, we kind of left and came back, we'd stay in touch a little bit. And one of those, you know, early European guys that kind of did what those guys do, you know, shoot outside a little bit, yeah. could handle the ball. Kind of an example of a kid who had gone somewhere else. He may have done a lot more in basketball, but on a deep team like Carolina, you know, he didn't get as many minutes as he probably should have got just because he had a really strong, you know, skill set from that European size.
Yeah, he was one of the undersung guys there. All right, let's go to the straight to the NCAA tournament. You guys, you get the first round win, and you sets up number one Oklahoma, and nobody is giving Carolina a chance. And I'll be honest with you, when I guess I didn't really focus too much on basketball outside the ACC, I had no idea any player on the Oklahoma team until that game when you guys played him. I was like, okay, Skeeter Henry, you know, yeah, who's this guy? I didn't know who he was, but you guys come out and take it to him, let him get back in the game, and comes right down to the end of 77-77, and you have one of your big games against Oklahoma, and that was one of the key points of this win right here. But it all comes down to the last play. And, man, what was it like on that timeout before that last play? What was Coach Smith telling you guys?
Well, you know, to be in that moment and to look back on it now, you get a sense of, like, if you don't know how Coach Smith was as a coach, like, those kind of moments were where he built his legacy. Because – my memory is, like, you know, as you can imagine, it's a tie game. Yeah. You think there's nerves going on? You're damn right. Like, it's crunch time. We're number one team. We kind of, like you said, let them get back. We're tied up. Like, we can win this game or we can give it away. And so we get over in the huddle. And all I remember, how many years ago, you know, 40 years ago almost, was how calm Coach Smith was. And he almost did this a lot, which was he kind of laughed. He goes, this is why we play these games, like these moments. Like he as a coach, he got into it that way. It's like this is when it's fun. Like, we're gonna go out there and get this win, and here's our play. And it was like calm. You're gonna do this, you're gonna pass it here. And literally, you're gonna swing it over to Rick, and Rick, you're gonna take him one on one. Like that was it. But like the confidence that came from him was like, he didn't drop a play for someone who couldn't do what he said. There wasn't any tough action going on. It was pretty basic. Throw it in, you know, let the clock get to whatever, you know, get the ball to Rick. Rick, you're going to have that side. And if I remember correctly, we all kind of were coming in. It wasn't much time, but, you right. know, Rick, he would call plays all season for people that could do one-on-one, and that was what Rick could do. It's like, this was a play we set up to give Rick the ball in a position where he can, you know, use his skill set, and you know, that's what happened. Like, and it was like, it may have shocked the world, but like, it just felt like this is, like Coach Smith, this is what we're here for, and this is why we play the game. And we made a lot of those plays, not yeah. always to win games, but like just those moments when, you know, we Carolina would get some of those victories where they shouldn't have, like doing some of this stuff, because Coach Smith is so calm and always, you know, taught his players to kind of be the same way. So that was my memory of that, was how calm Coach was and how we drew the play up, and it was a pressure moment, but like it almost like it was destined to be.
Right. And I was looking up some stuff last night, and they had an interview with Rick Fox after that, and he was telling that Coach told him, we're tied up. We only need one point. We don't need three, because, you know, Fox liked to shoot the threes. He said, we only need one. So you don't have to shoot a three, is what he was telling. But yeah, it was. That's one of my favorite Carolina memories right there. And the celebration you guys had after that was great. And senior year, big freshman class coming in, Montrose and all them. What was the feeling like? Well, you know, you see, okay, they're talking about this big freshman class. You know, I've been here 4 years. They're going to have to pay their dues. What was it like with those guys coming in? They're all the hype with them coming in.
Well, you know, that was the hype these days is off the charts. Back then, the freshman class could get hype, but it was a little different. And like you said, mainly because the system we were in, I knew I was going to get first shake. Just because I was a senior doesn't mean I had anything guaranteed, but he was going to give me a chance to win the position. And we had that strong class. And let me tell you what, Mr. Clifford Rozier, he ended up not staying in Carolina, but he definitely pushed me that year because that he wanted to play. He was very skilled. And by no means did I take anything for granted. I know we had a deep team. We still had George Lynch and Montrose up front.
Right.
We had Sullivan. They could also play a little bit. But the biggest thing that I took from that year was it's mine if I can go get it. And, you know, I started here and there throughout my first 3 years. But I knew that senior year, if I could just go get it and do what I did, that I'd get that job. And whether it was at a four with Montrose at a five or a five with Lynch at the four, like it didn't really matter. In the end, if you look at those stats, like a lot of kids played 25, 27 minutes. Like there's no kid, you know, playing 35 minutes really. So you're going to get your minutes really. And that's kind of what I was going with. Like, just go out there and do my thing.
And you mentioned another one of your teammates that went on to have a great NBA career, George Lynch. What was it like playing with George? That's another one I got my fingers crossed on, too. If you're listening right there, Mr. Lynch, got my fingers crossed. What was it like playing with George Lynch, though?
Ultimate competitor. I mean, coming in, I can remember right now walking in Granville. He's sitting on the bed, and this is George Lynch, like, shaking his hand. Like, I remember it like it was yesterday. And 6'8". And I remember thinking, oh, he's 6'8". Like, I got him. I got him a couple inches. Like, most people would think that, right? And that's where you make the first mistake because – like he wasn't a tall dude, like for a four man, but he was one of those guys who was relentless. He was strong as an ox, and he just played so hard. So that was all going on his whole career. He really just got better every year doing that, and became, you know, one of the greatest leaders that Carolina's ever had because of what he did out there. But a pleasure playing with him, and you know he didn't have gaudy numbers, but he kind of showed you what that kind of hard work and foundation can do, you know, became a lottery pick going through that.
Yeah, he worked his way from that freshman year right into a lottery pick when he came out of Carolina. And it, just like you said, and I totally agree, one of the best leaders Carolina's ever had, that national championship team, he led that team for sure.
Yep.
So then you get back to the ACC tournament, and I love this memory whatsoever, the ACC championship game. I don't even have to look at the score because I know it by heart. 96-74, blowout. And I just remember, and maybe you can tell me a little bit more, elaborate a little bit more. Christian Laettner and the referees were just going back and forth. And I just remember somebody shooting free throws, made the free throw, and Laettner's up there doing this, good call, and he gets a technical call. How much trash was Laettner talking in that game?
He was known to talk trash already, and I don't remember the timing on that play you're talking about, but I just know that the talking was decreasing as the game went along. like if you did watch that game, you got to remember that we lost the two regular season games, including our senior day. And we had no lack of confidence. We had one of those teams that if you look at that box score, I mean – people were filling up off the bench. You know, Hubert had a great game. Rick had a great game. We had so many different weapons. And that was part of the fun thing about playing on a good team that this just disciplined is we shut a lot of people up. Like there wasn't many people that kept on talking as the game went along. And now we played against some great players, no doubt. And Christian Laettner, you know, he was a great player, but you don't usually talk as much when you're down 20. And,
No.
I mean, actually, these days.
You shouldn't. You're not very smart if you do.
These days, kids talk no matter what. I don't think the score matters. But back in the day, when you're down 20, you kind of zip it.
Yeah. Yeah. You kind of keep it zip. So you guys end up getting to the Final Four. And one of the, I mean, I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I still don't believe it. Playing the Kansas game. And then Coach Smith gets ejected. I mean, talk a little bit about that situation and then what you guys, because I've never remember, as long as I've watched Carolina play, Coach Smith getting ejected.
I don't think he did. My memory is correct. I got in a little foul trouble early in that game. And I want to say that it was either my second or third call on me, my foul, that he was arguing the call when he got his first tech. Right. I could be wrong, but that's how I remember it. And then late in that game, got the second tech. My takeaway was didn't lose the game for us. I mean, sad to say, it was probably the senior class that we talked about so good. We didn't have – none of us had good games. You know, Kane and Rick and myself just didn't shoot well. We, you know, when you're an athlete and you're playing in a game like that, and you hate losing, but you want to go out swinging and playing your best. And that's my biggest regret about that game, is that none of us played our best. Like, we tried. We played, you know, played hard, but we just didn't have it that night. And it's one of those things where, again, our bench kept us in the game, but having Coach Smith go out there towards the end was what was like, did he do that on purpose? Like, was he doing that to shake Roy's hand when he walked by? Like, I don't know, because he, like you say, he never had done that before.
Right.
And he was the epitome of keeping it under control. So, you know, we'll never know what his thinking was, but I know one thing, he didn't cost us that game.
No.
In the least bit, but, you know, it was one of those things that he wanted to win. You know, he wanted to win. He was a competitor. And that time he got thrown out.
That had to be a weird feeling for all you guys, though, to look over there on the bench and not see him there, though. I mean, I know it was just for a short time, but still, it was weird for the fans at home to be like, Coach Smith got, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So your time at Carolina's over. NBA draft comes along. What are you hearing as far as – I know it's nothing like today, but – what are you hearing from NBA teams? Who is talking to you, or are you hearing you might be a first round pick?
Yeah, you know, that year was just an amazing journey, and my path to getting drafted was getting, like, at first when I first started that year, I was like, I had no dreams about getting drafted. So I started playing well, had a pretty, you know, Coach Smith would meet up with all the seniors throughout the year and kind of give them updates on where they're standing, you know, in the country on their rankings, and like, I was like number five or number four power forward in the country. And I was like, wow. Like, I didn't realize that. Like, you know, because again, different time frame. We didn't have all the internet going on where you go Google and stuff. So as the season ended and the agents started coming in, the agents would be allowed to kind of present themselves to the players so we can make a choice of which agent to pick. So you can imagine what these agents were telling the kids. So the agents start telling me, you know, oh, no, Pete, you're gonna first round draft pick. We got you like anywhere from 14 to 20. And I'm like, well, that sounds pretty good. And he goes, well, you know, 14 would be a long shot, but we think 20, I think it was Houston. And I was like, hey, that's fine. And I never even worked out for Houston. I worked out for like the Bulls at 26 and Charlotte at 28, but never worked out for the Rockets. And so I went to this little dinky hotel over there near Slugs. I don't know if you know that area. Slugs is gone. The hotel's gone. Like, everything's been built over. But yeah. I'm back in that little hotel with my dad, and we're watching the draft, and 20 comes up, and the Rockets pick this guy named John Roberts. And I remember many years I'd like go back and Google, like, what happened to John Roberts? Like, he never, I don't think he made it 1 year. I was like, and then Rick got drafted 24. You know, he was like two doors down in the hotel, and then I got this phone call, and it was Dick Motta, and he's like, you know, Pete, I want you to know we're gonna take you next with the Kings. And I'm like, the Kings? What? Where'd they come from? and they picked the guy from Kansas, Mark Randall, in 26, and they took me 27, and it was, I wouldn't even say it was expected. It was shocking because of where it was, and also the fact that it was the other side of the world, as far as I'm concerned. And the next pick after that was Charlotte. So I was kind of thinking I was going to Charlotte. So it caught me by surprise, for sure. And what I've learned as an old man is you're living through stuff and how it affected you. You just look at the end result. And I can't complain about anything in my career. It was tough to play out there for some bad teams, but it all worked out. I had a nice, you know, long career. I was able to get that championship, and it all worked out, but it was for sure not scripted.
Yeah, you end up moving on to Houston and getting a championship ring, playing behind Olajuwon, which we talked a little bit before we went on air about your you had that two-game stretch where you were averaging like about almost 24 points, and all of a sudden they put him back in for some reason. I mean, Chilka was a scoring machine. They needed to keep you in there.
I scored 25 at Denver, came back, scored 22 against Dallas, and that Dallas game was like a double, triple overtime. It was like one of those games you see on ESPN Classic still. And the next game, Rudy T pulled me over. He's like, Chilly, he goes, the dream's coming back. And I was like, does he mind coming off the bench? And he's like, I'm going to have to start him. And I was like,
going to have to start him. Yeah.
I was like, you know what? I get it. But it was weird because, you know, I've always had the theory that when you get to the league, and this is across the league, that everyone in the league deserves to be there and can play. And you can give the 12th guy on the bench, give him 35 minutes, and you'll be like, wow, I didn't know he could do that. Like, exactly. I've always believed that.
Exactly.
It may not be 100% true, but like, would I have ever been as good as Dream? No. But give anybody, you know, a starting position in 35, 40 minutes, and most of those guys can produce. So while it surprised a lot of people, like, when you're a player at that level, you got to have that confidence in yourself. And I did, but it was my two-game stretch that was over.
Yeah. And it's on YouTube, too. I mean, if you guys want to pull it up, they've got all his highlights from that Mavericks game up there. All right, so talk a little bit about what you're doing now. I think you just recently moved back to North Carolina.
My daughter, we had been out in California where my wife is from since I retired, since about 2000. And I've been school teaching for most of that time.
Right.
And about 16 years of that. And I middle school age, and then I did a lot of work with some homeschool kids. I love working with kids. But we had to deal with my older son and my daughter. Either one of them came back here to go to school, that we might move back to be around them. And my son was a soccer player, and he had a chance to if he got into Carolina, they were going to let him walk on the soccer team. And then late in the game, Cal Poly started recruiting him a little bit, and he chose to go to Cal Poly. And I was like, so close. And then my daughter came along, and she does track and field, and they've been talking to her over the last couple of years with her high jump. So she decided to come to Carolina. She's always wanted to come over here. So she came over. She's a freshman right now, and we moved over in July. So we are in North Raleigh, and we're back in the area. And I've been coming back every year ever since I left school for like a week visit. But this is the first time I've obviously lived over here in this area since school. And North Raleigh is awesome. I love it over here.
Right. That's great. Back in North Carolina. So I'm going to ask you a few quick hitting questions, and then we'll get you out of here.
Okay.
Toughest one-on-one opponent that you went up against in your playing career?
I'll have to go 1A is Karl Malone, and 1B is Charles Barkley.
Wow, that's two good ones right there. Toughest place to play?
We're talking NBA?
It could be NBA, college. You can give me one for each of them.
Well, I'm going to go with college. It's tough in the sense that it's loud, when that is Cameron. But at the same time, if you're a competitor, you like that. So it wasn't always that bad. Yeah. It wasn't that bad. On the road, you know, believe it or not, I played one season in the old Boston Garden, and that was a tough place to play.
That had to be great to play there. Right.
Yeah.
All right. Your favorite memory? Well, before I get to that, who were the worst trash talkers? I know Leitner was one of them. Who was the worst trash talkers you were around?
Well, one of my teammates was a great trash talker, and that's J.R. Reed. Like, if you've ever talked to him, when he was coaching up at Monmouth, you could watch the game on TV, and you could hear his voice. It is so loud. He has that loud, deep voice. And I'd play in the league, and I'd be doing a move, and like, he'd be yelling at me from the side, from the bench. And he'd be talking crap from the bench, and you could always hear him. He had the best voice for it. And along with him would be the guy named Vernon Maxwell. Mad Max.
Oh, yeah.
That was a great trash talker. And the guy that you hate to play against because of trash talk, but then you love him when it's on your team.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. Favorite memory, favorite basketball memory.
Favorite basketball memory, I'll have to say, is going to have to be that championship. Like there's lots of stuff individually that I could go to, but when you play a team sport, and especially when you go through 9 years in the league and you play on 8 years of bad teams, like that 1 year you're on a good team and you actually, you get hot and you make a run to the playoffs and you win the championship, like there's nothing else to do, right? That's what every player strives for. And it doesn't matter, you know, to me, if you started or the 15th guy on the bench, everyone on that team, you know, was part of that team and part of that system that worked through that year to get that trophy.
Awesome. Last thing we'll talk about, basketball season's right around the corner. It'll be here before you know it. What's your outlook for Carolina this year? Second year under Coach Davis, one of your former teammates, second year under him. And what was your reaction when you found out Coach Davis was named head coach?
Well, you know, I again come back and been in touch with Hubert over the years. You know, he was at my wedding. Always knew when he left ESPN to go to Carolina that was a perfect spot for him because he wanted to be in that area anyways, and basketball was still part of his life. When he got the head job, I was thrilled. Like, there's probably 10 to 12 people that would have been great coaches here, but when you talk about what kind of person he is, what kind of personality he has, what kind of passion he has for basketball, I think it was a great fit. And you know, people were probably second guessing it last year, and they're probably people are going to second guess no matter what. But when I ask myself the question is people will complain about Nick Saban, and I'm like, what's wrong with Nick Saban? No, he's the jerk. This, and I'm like, would you send your kid to play football at Alabama? Yeah, I guess I would. And Hubert, like, there's not a family in the world that wouldn't send their kid to play for Hubert Davis. He is a great coach and a great person. And no matter what happens on the court, when they leave that system or that program at Carolina, they're going to have a great experience because of the head coach. So I really was a big fan of that. As a letterman, I get to go to I guess I'm not special, but you can go to practices. So I've been to a couple of practices this year. And let me just tell you, without giving you too many spoilers, they got some good kids coming in. If you didn't know, they got some good pieces that are already here. You know, they talked about the Iron Five this year. Like we're talking, I counted at least 10 kids that can really contribute this year. So the biggest problem he was going to have is how does he get those kids on the court? You know, there's going to be a lot of time when you're going to have to use different pieces because of injuries and things, but I was impressed, and that's not even counting Jalen Washington, who was kind of still out of practice a little bit. But those kids that are coming in are solid. The people that are there, not only are they already a proven quantity, but they've gotten better. Like, you know, you don't just stay the same when you play, so you get better.
Right.
So some of these kids that you thought you know their game, like, you might be surprised by some of the things you see next year or this year because they've improved. Like, that's what they do. They play basketball all summer. And we got some good talent. Now, that doesn't mean – I have to say I didn't like at the ACC interviews I saw recently that they're like, well, it's NC championship or it's a bad season. Like, I hate it when they do that. Like, I love the goal. I love the goal, but, like, that – you can't – I mean, I guess you can, but, like, it's hard to put that as your only thing that's going to be a measure of success. If you don't know, injuries might happen, you know, whatever is going to happen. But this team has a definite enough talent to get back. But as you saw last year, like, you got to be hot at the right time. And hopefully, you know, hopefully that kicks in again.
Yeah. And just like you said, everybody at the first year was ready to ride Hubert out of town. And I was like, gosh, no, the guy had been there half a year yet. You got to give him a chance. And it paid off. And to see the look on some of those Duke fans' face end of the year was worth it to me. But Mr. Chilcutt, I'm not going to take up any more of your time. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to do this. I've really enjoyed it. If you ever talk to Scott Williams, let him know. I'd love to get an interview with him.
I do and I will, but I tell you, he's a tough kid. Sometimes he has a different mindset on these things, but he's probably done a lot more than I have. So
he probably has.
You know,
I'm gonna keep checking with him. I'm gonna keep checking with him. But like I said, Thank you so much, guys. That is Carolina legend, Mr. Pete Chilcutt.
All right. Thank you, guys.